Penguin Random House Audio presents All This Could Be Different by Sarah Tuncombe Matthews. Read for you by Rena Dutt. For Shireen and for Phil. Lord, I confess, I want the clarity of catastrophe, but not the catastrophe. Like everyone else, I want a storm I can dance in. I want an excuse to change my life. Franny Choi. We wanted a chance for every human being to be strong and live a life of happiness. Emil Seidel.
I.
A1.
I would like to tell a story of a different time. I was 22. A teak switch of a girl. I had finished college. There were not many jobs. The economy had punctured like a tire. Obama had won a second term. He said jobs, healthcare, national healing. He said Trayvon Martin could have been my son. I was moved by this, thought that sort of imaginative exercise bravery. I would listen to his speeches on NPR as I dressed for work. I had found a job. This set me apart from my college friends. I was a consultant, or going to be. This despite my arty degree. A consultant in training. Three toddlers hiding in a suit. I did not consider myself a sellout. What I felt was that I had been saved from drowning. My classmates without jobs had moved in with their parents. We're working unpaid internships at noble nonprofits. I wish them well. My parents were not with me, had left me to make my way in the new country. I was glad they did not, for now, need me to send them money. They had before. My client was a baobab of a corporation, Fortune 500. They made car seats, heating units, pedometers, batteries. My boss demanded I wear pantyhose. You are a contractor, he told me. No benefits. Women who work for me wear makeup. That is how it is. My men wear suits. You must dress better than the clients, always. That is how they know we work for them. We get the client to their definition of success. People only want to hire a guy when they want to be him a little. Remember that. Try some makeup. Just a little. Nothing tardy. I listened dutifully. The pay was only okay. Billable contractors' wages. This despite the 50-hour weeks. I had to file self-employment taxes. But my boss liked me. Early on, he called me his rock star. This was funny to me, since in actuality, rock stars get on stage, perform, fuck many girls, wreck the hotel room. I, meanwhile, sweated competence, a hungry efficiency. Waxed my arms, radiated deference. Never met a Gantt chart I didn't like. He had first offered me $19 an hour. His firm was tiny, only 9 people. I said, thank you. I will think on it. I walked to a good restaurant in my college town and drank a full glass of white wine in the middle of the afternoon. I called him back. I said, hello, Peter. I have another offer, but I want to work with you. Would you consider 30? In the space between the gin bottles, the mirrored bar showed me a soft-featured girl, skin the color of Hennessy, eyes vacant with fear. My boss said, like a god granting a boon, 23 an hour. You'll relocate to Milwaukee where your client is. I will pay for your apartment. That sounds great, I said. May have added, I'm honored to get to work for you. All nonsense. Once I hung up, I punched the air and yelled. I remember the restaurant as deserted, but it may not have been. This is not a story about work or precarity. I am trying, late in the evening, to say something about love, which for many of us is not separable from the other shit. As the summer began, I moved to Milwaukee, a rusted city where I had nobody. Parents two oceans away. I lay on the sun-warmed wood floor of my paid-for apartment and decided I would be a slut. B1. Thomas Zwick was a compact bear of a boy, a few months older than me. In college, we had settled into an instinctive comradeship. Half Italian, half pure Germanic Scani. Tom had disliked me at first, then mysteriously decided I was good. Could be one of his boys. I had been very shy then around his girlfriend, who had dark wisps of hair and a beautiful face, as soft and malleable as a baby's. This, paired with an alarming kindness, left me barely able to speak. Tom, I was comfortable with. At some basal level of emotion, we were alike, even though Tom was a spiky version of what we called a bro, a man who would not veer from a masculinity at once laid back and entrenched. He lived in sweats, listened to death metal when he was not listening to yacht rock, lifted weights daily to a podcast on Ingles, managed with good humor the flares of his irritable bowel syndrome. He gave good hugs. He called me his dude. I loved that. In July, Peter said that we needed a new junior consultant on the project, another me. I forwarded his email on. Tom was unemployed then, still living 90 minutes away in our college town, going to free concerts at the terrace, taking meandering bike rides around Madison's lakes. His inability to find a job startled me. He was the smartest person I knew. I comprehended at a technical level what a recession was, but not what it meant, truly meant, for the people tumbling into its maw. Some half of my generation never recovered.
"Thanks, my dude. We'll think on it,"
Tom replied. And I, in my sparsely furnished apartment, felt my anger flare. I'd reached out in a bid to cement friendship beyond graduation and $1 drinks at bars and burgers at the plaza. In remembered fondness, knowing he needed the job and that he was from around here. He, like me, unlike our most forceful savvy friends, did not seem ready yet to flee Wisco for the coasts. "Cool," I wrote back. "You do that." So far, being a slut had returned mixed results, and I suspected that, like swimmers with small feet or curvy ballerinas, I was not built for the championship leagues. There was some part of me too sensitive for it, and I was not yet confident I wanted that to die. At the same time, I had an opposing instinct, this counterweight of anxious hunger, like a timepiece, ticking always. I made myself a dinner of saru and box origin idli. I masturbated for hours. Then I walked an aimless zigzag around the apartment, avoiding the open question of a shower. I had bought a stack of books on the history of Milwaukee, thinking they would help me unlock this stocky city with its emptied streets. These I had not opened. I looked through the introduction of one doorstopper tome, turned some pages, and impatiently thumped it down beside me on the floor. On my phone, I read an article about how, in certain cultures, there are no separate words for the color green and the color blue. And if you showed someone a grass-hued paint swatch next to the one color of summer sky, they would say these were the same. Different shades of one thing. My phone buzzed. A green question mark bubble hung from its ceiling. It said, "Amy, downstairs." Amy was the property manager of the apartment Peter was putting me up in. She lived.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?